On this edition of Free Culture Radio, we say goodbye to my colleague, my mentor, and my very dear friend, Kevin Zeese. I would not be here, well, scratch that, I would be nowhere if it weren't for him. This one's for you, brother. Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when people who use drugs are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, or even brutalized. On this installment of Free Culture Radio, we say goodbye to a friend of mine. Kevin Zeese was my colleague, my mentor, and my friend. I first got to know Kevin in 1983. I should go on, but I'm not sure I can talk, so we're going to go ahead and listen to this last interview I got with Kevin in 2017. Most of it has been unaired until now. What should these corporate, like they're not going to go away.
No, I think yet. what marijuana advocates, including people in the industry, need to do is to position themselves as independent of both parties, be critics of both parties when necessary, and work with both parties when appropriate, but also to support efforts that will go further. I have no doubt, for example, that the Green Party would be the best party for marijuana legalization. And even though the system is designed to stop third parties from being viable, the stronger those are, the better it is for people really trying to make revolutionary change. And this is a revolutionary change. This is a radical shift from the drug war era, from what Jeff Sessions would like to support if he could get away with it. And so that kind of radical shift requires us to be pushing at the system. And so that means, people should be supporting groups that are pushing against the system, popular resistance. We love your support. But it should also be supporting third parties, and it should be supporting the edges of the two parties, the inside the two parties, the libertarian fringe that supports marijuana legalization on the Republican side, the radical progressives, there are so few of them though, in the Democratic Party. I mean, you should really be pushing the edges. You shouldn't be a centrist group. You should be independent, and you should be pushing for what you want and not compromising with the two parties, the two corporate dominated parties, because that kind of compromise may look like an easier path in the short run, but in the long run, it's going to lead us to a place we don't want to go. It's going to lead us to a market we really don't want to see. And so I think it's really important for the movement to know what it wants, and to work for that in an uncompromising way, recognizing that what they are doing is a rebellion against the traditional drug war. And there's a big bureaucracy that still feeds on that drug war. And so as a rebellion, you have to think of yourself. You have to play it carefully on how you work with the insiders, but also recognize you have to work with the outsiders, because that's where the edges get pushed. That's where your issue will get defined correctly. If you want your issue defined correctly, you have to work outside the system and then bring that and make the system come to you. So take a clear position, take a clear stand, and use that opportunity that you have those people who are pushing at those at the system to be your clarity. And that clarity of what you really want, and stand with it, don't compromise on it, and pull the system toward us. That should be our approach as a movement.
See, I'm glad you brought that up. That's one of the things that has always, when negotiation and politics, the art of compromise, yes, fine. But you don't start off your you're negotiating. You don't start off by adopting what you think of as a compromise position. You don't start off by thinking, okay, well, I'll put forward something that'll be acceptable to all parties, and we can start there, and we can just probably end there. I just that's not how you buy a used car. That's sure not how you do politics. I mean,
well, you know, and it does lead to long-term problems. I mean, I understand that, you know, when you try to pass a voter initiative, it's not easy, not an easy task, and especially the early states. And it requires a lot of polling to see where the public is, a lot of focus groups to get, you know, refine where the public is and what you can actually pass through a vote. And so compromises were made. And the problem in many states with initiatives is they're very hard to change legislatively. And so the compromises you make in passing the initiative will come back to haunt you down the road. Just like, you know, we're thinking of Proposition 13 in California, how that property tax initiative screwed up funding of education for years in California. So how do you now, there were compromises made in all these states, now how do you correct those compromises and actually put in place what you want? It's a difficult task. That's what I meant by, you know, compromise seems like the easy way to get the thing done. And in short term, it might be, but in the long run, it comes back and you have to deal with it. And so there are definitely some issues that we've seen in the various initiative states that will need to be dealt with in the future.
I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, the editor of DrugWarFacts.org, and our guest today is Kevin Zeese, the author, journalist, activist, organizer. PopularResistance.org is one of the places where you do work, and, you know, I'm going to kick myself because I forgot to ask you before, but tell folks about Clearing the Fog.
Clearing the Fog is our radio show. Dr. Margaret Flowers and I co-host it. FOG stands for Forces of Greed, which I find a very clarifying way to describe what happens on many issues. If you can clear the fog and understand what's really going on, get those forces of greed propaganda items out of the way, things become much clearer. It's a weekly show. We do it on We Act Radio, which is on the black side of town in Washington, D.C., in Anacostia at Martin Luther King Avenue and Good Hope Road. And it's a community radio station, but we get podcasted around the country, including on, you know, stations out west. And so we try to go in depth on issues that on each hour, each week. We've done probably almost 200 shows. We try to go in depth on an issue that's in the news. We had a great show this week on immigration. And I think the key thing that came out of that one for me is the importance of figuring out ways to unite the white working class with Latino and black workers. Because the reality is that immigration, when it's illegal and people are undocumented, is bad for all. It's bad. It drives down wages for everybody because the system, the owners of capital and businesses can underpay and mistreat workers without own documents, and that allows them to lower wages on the working class, the legal working class, including the white working class. And so if we have real immigration reform, we can actually fix that and will help all of us. And so it's a way we have to really rethink immigration. And there's now talk of May Day actions that will unite white, black, and Latino workers together. And that would be, I think, the kind of thing that the system, the power structure, really feel threatened by. So, you know, it's always an action-based show. It's always an in-depth analysis. We happen to have great guests on it. If you go to clearingthefogradio.org, you can get podcasts and download them. And I think you'll find a lot more in-depth analysis there than you'll find in almost anywhere else.
And it's a great show. And you know, working with on We Act Radio, I just had Kimone Freeman, our good friend, on as a guest recently, talking about that. I mean, radio is a tremendous medium. It's just it's an excellent way of communicating. It's an excellent. What do you think about radio as a tool for organizing?
Well, I think that you know, it's so important that we have our own media, and radio is certainly an inexpensive way to reach a lot of people at any time now that podcasting has become so easy. But I think we have to really be constantly thinking as activists about how we can be the media, whether you do it through a radio show or whether you do it through your social media. Of course, we have to use corporate structures like Facebook and Twitter, but always be aware that those can be transitioned in ways we don't like. But I think building the social media is critical. And I mentioned that our last newsletter talked about what do we do if there's a crisis, economic, terrorist, or military, and how do we prevent this kind of false patriotism rallying around and unifying everyone around Trump. Our social media will be key. People will have to be, that's why you did the article, was so people could be thinking about it and be ready to respond in ways that point to the real cause, which is the systemic problems in our government. And so social media will be critical. Independent media can be really critical. Community radio, podcasts. We have to use all of our various means of communication to get our message out. And when we do that in a unified way, we can dominate the media. We can dominate the narrative. The media, mass corporate media, is very powerful, but we don't have to. If we get our views out through the mass social media and our independent news outlets, we can really shape the narrative and force the corporate media to tell more truth. At least their lies will be more obvious to people. And so we're getting an interesting time, I think, in our history of media, where corporate news is not trusted. The polls on corporate news show, you know, only 1 in 4 Americans trust the media, and they're losing viewers, losing readers at the same time that the social media is growing. So there's a tipping point that we're approaching. When is not clear, but we're reaching a tipping point where we can create the narrative for the country. And I think that's a really important task. So we all have to, as activists, be conscious of, you know, even retweeting and even, you know, sharing more on good stories on Facebook and other mediums in social media, and really playing our role as media messengers, because that's an easy part and a critical part of people being activists.
That's an interview with my colleague, mentor, and friend, Kevin Zeese. That interview was recorded in 2017. We'll hear more in a moment. This is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. You know, I should have recorded an interview with Kevin the last time I saw him. That was in July of 2019. I can't express how sorry I am that that didn't happen. Yeah, I first met Kevin in fall of 83. I was a student at the University of Iowa. I just started a chapter of NORML there, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Kevin was the executive director back then. The other state university, Iowa State University, had had a NORML chapter for a few years at that point. In fact, the head of that chapter was also the head of the student government at ISU. They held a conference in the early part of fall semester of 83. I went there with a friend. I mean, it was inspiring because of that example. Later that fall, I joined with other progressives to take over the University of Iowa Student Senate. But I digress. At that conference at Iowa State, that's where I first met the then executive director of NORML, Kevin Zeese. I mean, he was brilliant. He was articulate. He was well informed. I mean, he was the best role model anyone could find. Now, I didn't realize that he was only a few years older than me, a little bit over 7 years, to be precise. He was just inspiring. So back at Iowa, fall of 83, I got involved in progressive politics. The U.S. had just invaded Grenada. I'm loud. I'm articulate. So on my first demonstration, the coordinator had a sore throat, and so he asked me to walk up at the front and lead people in chants. I'm like, okay. You know, first time I was ever on the front page of the school newspaper, the Daily Iowan. I went from there to running for student senate. I went with the Phoenix Party. We won on our first try. But again, I'm digressing, and in this case, I'm bragging. So Anyway, in November of 83, there's a march against U.S. intervention in Central America. It's a committees in solidarity with the peoples of El Salvador, CISPES. Anyway, that was planned in Washington, D.C. That very weekend, Normal was holding an annual national conference. The folks from the Iowa State chapter were able to get funds for a van to drive to the conference out in D.C., and they had a few seats open, so I hitched a ride along with my friend Jackson Club. Now, Jack was a yippie. Youth International Party, you know, Abby Hoffman, Jerry Rubin, the hardcore peace-loving marijuana legalizing hippies from the 60s, and they were still around in the 80s. And yeah, I met Jack when I started the University of Iowa chapter at Normal because he was an old friend to the director of Iowa Normal, who's an attorney in Des Moines named Raymond Perry. He and I had gone together to Ames to that conference a month or so before. So anyway, because of Jack, I went to this conference in D.C. And while we were there, he introduced me to some of his old friends, these other yippies, people like Ben Mizell, Dennis Perrone, and Dana Beale. And of course, I also saw Kevin once again, well, with him being executive director at Normal. And that weekend, I also met Sandy Burbank. Now, Sandy was a co-founder and the executive director of a group called Mothers Against Misuse and Abuse, MAMA, a terrific, amazing organization based in Mosier, Oregon, so groundbreaking, so way ahead of their time. Sandy was also a chief petitioner for the Oregon Marijuana Initiative. So anyway, in summer of 84, my friend Jack Club gets a phone call from another yippie who's named Jean Lang, and she was in Oregon. She told him about a marijuana legalization initiative there that needed petitioners, the Oregon Marijuana Initiative. Jack told me about it, and I needed something to do that summer that was better than delivering pizza, so I got on a Greyhound bus to Portland. I got there. Gene Lang and Phil Goodner picked me up at the bus station and they took me to John Sajo's house. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out what's going on, but Jack Herrer comes into the house that afternoon. He sees me sitting there, apparently goofing off. I explained I just arrived, and so he grabbed me up and drove me to the nearest strip mall, and he gave me instructions on how to petition on the way, and he left me there to gather signatures. Hours later, I mean, it was dark. The grocery store in that shopping mall was the only thing open. It was about to close. I didn't know where I was. I didn't know why I was there. And, oh my God. And so then I could hear the engine of a van approaching. And it's this guy, and I could hear this guy laughing as he pulls into the lot. It's this guy, Jack, you know, and he's like, I'd forgotten all about you. And Jack was happy with the number of signatures I'd gotten, so it was all good. But I digress. Kevin Zeese was a close friend and mentor. He was also my colleague. For several years, he was the executive director of the organization for which I worked, Common Sense for Drug Policy. You know, to be blunt, I don't do grief well. So let's just go straight to some more of that interview from 2017, the last time I got an interview with Kevin. There have been any number of times I've seen a news story and it's like, this is 12 hours old. You know, people have probably already seen this. And yet I have to remind myself, wait a minute, I've only just now seen this story. And I'm kind of obsessive about news. So maybe I do have a few of my 3,500 Facebook friends and followers who haven't actually, you're up to 5,000, but you know, I'm catching up. So, you know, how many of them maybe haven't seen that yet? And so, yeah, I'll go ahead and hit retweet or, you know, repost because, you're right. In sharing information is really key.
And you've got to tell the people who follow you, in whatever social media you're using that they should repost it. People have to get in the habit of being media. And, you know, if you have 3,000 or 5,000 people viewing your page, if you get, 1,000 of them to retweet or repost, you are reaching, tens of thousands. I mean, if we look at our work at Popular Resistance, we get about, I think, 150,000 to 200,000 views a month. Let's see. I'm trying to think. My math is terrible. Yeah, it's about that. And then, you know, we see that articles get reposted and tweets go out, and then we see the social media that we're using, and you know, we're reaching tens of thousands of people with each thing we put up if we want to emphasize it. Obviously, everything we put up we don't emphasize. You know, we just pick a few key ones to emphasize, but we are reaching tens of thousands of people, and the tens of thousands of people we're reaching are people who are active and who are, you know, involved. And so those are people who are communicating to their communities. And so I think we, you know, if we do that, we are helping to create the movement going in the right direction in a very non-hierarchical way, not by ordering anyone to do anything, but just by sharing information. And I think that's the most powerful, when people can digest it themselves, figure it out for themselves, and then take it another step. Whether that's just retweeting or rewriting it. I'd love for people, for example, we did this article on how do we deal with a crisis. I'd love to see other people write about that and get their ideas about how we deal with a crisis and how we prevent this unification around Trump if there is a crisis. I'd love for lots of people writing about that in their own ways. I think we can all learn from each other. So a lot of our work is just to kind of start the process going and get everyone thinking and sharing ideas of their own. And I think that's a great thing. That's how movements move.
It's a good segue into the question of how do people keep up with the work you're doing? If you've given a couple of the websites, give us those again, and also your Twitter who should people be following?
Well, if you go to the popularresistance.org website, you'll see that on the top right hand side we have a list of various projects of ours that are related to it. We consider right now we're just starting, I think, one of the most important projects, a Medicare for All project called Health Over Profit. And it's for National Improved Medicare for All. It's going to be a multi-year campaign. Our TPP campaign was almost 6 years. It's still ongoing now we've transformed it into a Trade for People and Planet campaign to try to transition trade away from this corporate trade model. But this Medicare for All project is probably also going to be a multi-year, five-plus-year type campaign. But if we win that, it transitions so much because we are challenging big corporate interests. We're challenging the insurance industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the healthcare investors who are profiting from people's illness. And so you're challenging corporate power in a big way. You're giving power to people to make their own health decisions rather than an insurance industry deciding where you can get health care and what kind of health care you can get. You're creating an idea that we're moving away from commodification and privatization towards providing public services and public goods. Those are major transitions in our political makeup. So even though it's about providing health care for all, which is important enough as itself, it is also about major transitions in how our political culture operates. So. And TPP was the same kind of thing. That was challenging transnational corporations. Net neutrality was challenging telecom companies. So we've always been taking on these very big challenges against corporate interests, and I think is key. But if you look at the right-hand side up on top there, you'll see that. We also separate popular resistance into multiple categories: strategy, education, resistance. You can pick different topics and see all the articles on developing strategy. Our goal is to build a broad-based mass movement, and we really know the history of what works in movements. We study it very carefully. We report on it on popular resistance so people know what they need to do to succeed, and that's our goal. Our goal is to build power. We're not just doing this because we like to do a sit-in or we like to hold a sign. We're doing this because we want to build power for people. And so we are being very intentional about everything we do in this project. Popular Resistance really is the kind of catch-all for all the various work we do. I'm on Twitter at KBZeese, and you can follow me there. And while my Facebook page is full, you can still follow it. And everything is open to anybody, whether you're an actual friend or just a follower. So you can get involved with my work on that if you want to follow it on Facebook. Some people don't like to use Facebook. I certainly understand that. It probably is a CIA front. it's amazing that we have a couple articles on Facebook and the CIA and their involvement helping setting it up. It's kind of scary. But anyway, we still use it as a tool, knowing what it really is.
Well, you know, sometimes they create the tool and don't understand what it can do.
No, we have to use everything to our advantage. We are living in a surveillance state, a very big security state, and we know the power that the government does have to suppress dissent. And so we just know those realities, but we still have to use whatever tools we can to advance our cause, recognizing the limits of them. And we also have to be constantly creative. And we're glad to seeing, you know, more secure methods of communication becoming available. And we'll use those as well. But we have to be constantly creative in finding ways to push our agenda forward and recognize that, you know, everything that is done to stop us, we can use to our advantage. And our goal is to, no matter what happens, turn it to our advantage and advance the movement. And so I think we're successfully doing that on a lot of fronts, and I'm hoping we can even do that during the Trump administration and make a mass movement that's more powerful than Trump, just as previous mass movements have been more powerful compared to other presidents.
Any closing thoughts for the listeners?
I think the most important thing for people to take away is that we have tremendous opportunity right now as people. We're lucky in many ways. The challenges that we face can be overcome. And we're lucky in ways that because we have a lot of people with experience from multiple generations, we have youth who are questioning the status quo. And that's a combination for an incredible movement. We're lucky to know the 100 years of resistance movements and what's worked and what hasn't. There are books about what makes movements succeed, and we can learn from that success. And we have people who worked in the 1960s era, 70s era movements. We have people who worked in the anti-corporate globalization era movements. We have the experience of the Obama years and what's succeeded in those years. And we have the challenges of Donald Trump, who is bringing forward all of the flaws of our current oligarch system of governance. He's like an open book. He isn't, unlike Hillary Clinton, who has her two faces, you know, the public face and the private face, and Obama, who is very, and Bill Clinton, who are both big smiling guys who showed empathy and then went around and did things that really were totally corporate in nature. We have a guy who's clear on all the sub-issues of racism, anti-immigrant issues, on the corporate power, on big business power, and he's mouthing some, you know, populist falsehoods that are going to become very clear in the future. So I think we're in a really good position as in our own strength, and where the two parties are, both in very fragile states, and where the government is also in a very fragile state. So these next 20 years are going to be so key. So if you have any sense of getting involved, this is the time to do it and to get in and play your role, because movements are made up of lots of people who make things happen, and every person can make a tremendous difference.
That was part of an interview I did in 2017 with the recently departed and much lamented Kevin Zeese. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thank you again for listening. So long!